and welcome back to the Run Strong podcast with me, Gary House. It is now episode 11, so thank you for supporting this podcast so far. I have been told that episode 11 is kind of a magic number. It's likely that the podcast will continue if we get past 11, so hopefully good things are to come. Thanks for the support so far. I've also been told that I don't do a good enough job of introducing myself at the beginning of these things, because for some reason, some of you may not have heard of me before and not seen my content on social media, things like that, but it's all right. I'm sure you will. But yeah, so in light of that, my name is Gary. I am first and foremost Workwise, a coach, and I cover in my coaching club, hopefully, anything training, nutrition, mindset, and it's all wrapped up with a bit of good fun, hopefully. I try and look deep into the science. I've got a lot of clever people around me that I can call on, and then I just try and simplify that information and put it into my club with coaching plans and little bite-sized videos and just basically Q&As each week. So yeah, that's a bit of my background. Hopefully you'll come along for a bit of the ride with these podcasts. Check me out on social media, GaryHouse_ on Instagram, and it's Run Strong on Facebook, although I'm going to change that pretty soon because there seems to be, funny enough, a lot of other Run Strongs cropping up in the last 12 months. or Run Strongers, or yeah, just different variations. So I think it's about time that it's called Gary House, and then people can easily find me and not get confused with other versions. Yeah, but enough about that. Today we've got the sports dietitian on, Alexandra Cook. I've met up with Alex quite a few times, but it's one of those things that Instagram is good for. It's bad for a lot of reasons, but we kind of got chatting on Instagram, and she is a sports dietitian, so she's qualified in this stuff for a start, which I obviously would prefer to have a chat with. She's also a UK athletics coach, really kind of distinguished runner herself, so it's good to speak to people like this. And when I put out content in the early days, I say the early days, it was only about 18 months ago, and I might be kind of giving quite a hard-lined opinion, Alex was one of the people that backed me up on quite a lot of the nutrition or diet and things like that posts. So yeah, it's good of her as a dietitian, as a registered dietitian, to kind of help me if I got a question maybe, and also back me up sometimes. And it just gave me a bit of confodcast today to talk about runner's tummy and everything that goes along with that. It's a subject that I think 99% of the runners that I coach struggle with at some point, varying degrees. I myself have struggled in the past. There's not many runners that don't get it at some point. And yeah, so it's a good topic to talk about. Alex also did a talk on the same thing at the running show, the National Running Show at the weekend in Birmingham at the NEC. I was also there doing a talk. So again, it was just a good chance to catch up. We actually recorded this podcast before the National Running Show, but I didn't want to put it out and before the talk on Saturday. You're here solely for Alex's discussion on the runner's tummy, then you might want to fast forward it a few minutes, because I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of my experience of the National Running Show weekend. It was the first time I've attended anything like that, if I'm honest. I've been to marathon expos and race expos, and I can't stand them, if I'm honest. So when the National Running Show set up a couple of years ago, I'll just be honest and say I wasn't that interested, and it's just not my thing. It's usually highly tailored to road runners, which I can't call myself a road runner. And yeah, so it's just not my thing. The speakers this year were just a lot better caliber. I was just a lot kind of more interested in them, and that's nothing to do with me being a speaker. Bad Boy Running podcast and the guys behind that, Ali Bailey and specifically, I have to give a shout out to for first of all kindly inviting me to talk. They all looked after me all weekend. They were all really friendly. Some of them are just batshit mental, obviously, as you can imagine, but their podcast has grown and grown and grown, and you cannot ignore the calibre of guests that they get on. You cannot ignore the calibre of guests that they had at the running show, minus me, maybe. I was a bit of a filler, I think. But yeah, they just go in strength to strength, and they pulled off a really good weekend, actually. The Ultra Show was, the Ultra Stage was my highlight of the weekend, along with some other experiences, which I'll go into. But yeah, what I will say is I went into it not knowing what to expect. If I hadn't been asked to talk, would I have gone? Possibly not. I don't think I would have. But the fact that I was asked to talk, I couldn't kind of turn that opportunity down to meet people and just hear some of the stories from people like Lazarus Lake, Camille Heron, Nikki Spinks was there as well, just James Elson and Dan Lawson, just the first year that they've had Ultra or Trail involved in the show, which showed because the stage just couldn't cope with it, I guess. And when people like Laz or Camille were on, they had a bit of a hard time kind of controlling the actual crowd. So that's just, again, you've got a pat. So I did go down on the Saturday. My talk was on the Sunday, but having the opportunity to go and, well, one, see Alex talk, catch up with her, and I knew some of my Run Strong members were going to be there on the Saturday that I've never met. So it was really nice, actually, just to go chill out, sit in the cafe for a bit, and it just turned into a good, fun day. There was, I'll be honest, before I parked up the car, and you have to get a shuttle bus to the NEC. It's that big, this place. I'd never been before. Before I'd even got on the bus, someone had asked me for a selfie because they enjoy like my Instagram and my Facebook and stuff. And I thought they were taking the piss, honestly, or they thought I was someone else. But yeah, that was great. It kicked off a good weekend. And my selfie count for people grabbing me, wanting a picture, just I lost count. And that might sound like I'm being big-headed or something. In all honesty, I was just kind of anyone that was speaking to me, I was asking for a picture in the end because... yeah, I just got used to people wanting a picture. But if you're listening to this podcast and you came up to me, grabbed me, and or just chatted to me, then thank you very much, because every one of those conversations or pictures just means that you might have seen a post of mine, or you might have read an email or listened to a podcast or anything, and it's either made you kind of think about your running, you might have took one golden nugget from what I say, dare I say you might have been inspired a little bit by anything that me or my members do, or I might just have made you laugh. Yeah, which isn't, I don't go out to do all these things all of the time. I'm just a normal average runner, kind of working hard at being a better coach, a better runner, and kind of bringing people along for the ride. So yeah, it was pretty overwhelming at first, because there was, at one point, there was a small queue of people to speak to me and to take a picture, which, yeah, it just shows that, yeah, I'm doing something right. For everyone that came to the talk, whether you were there to see Nikki Spinks or Camille, which was possibly the case, I thank you for listening. Thank you for not heckling too much. Whoever that guy was with the massive penny farthing, with a dog riding a penny farthing, if you weren't there, obviously you won't understand what I'm going on about. Thank you as well, because you distracted me enough to think about an answer for one of the questions. But I don't think I embarrassed myself. I didn't swear. I don't go out to swear all the time, but it was a risk that I took, or that they took even. I just had the mindset of, right, I've been to children's parties before. I've got kids now. I've been to plenty of children's parties. I can get through 30 minutes of talking on stage. I wasn't really, when I first got asked, I thought it was going to be me talking like I've done in the past, with a bit of a story, some pictures maybe, and kind of, yeah, some learning to take away. But it was a much more relaxed kind of style. I didn't know that until a few days beforehand, so what I had kind of prepared went out the window. Ali and I had questions at me. If I'm honest, I don't think they'd thought it through too much because they've got much bigger fish to fry than me. So the only thing I would have changed is I would either have wrote the questions or knew the questions or just given free rein. If you give me a microphone for 30 minutes, I can look after a small group of people. Don't worry about it. But it was good, actually. We had a good laugh. And as I could feel, the audience weren't going to kind of walk out as soon as I challenged some of their beliefs. I got a bit more kind of free with my answers and hopefully gave everyone a good time before Camille Heron came on. And I won't lie. I did notice at least 5 or 6 people getting up out of their chairs and leaving when I left. So that's good on you. Good on you. You'd come see me, not Camille. yeah, the talk went well on a Sunday. Outside of my own talk, which was very short, I just met up with lots of people. There was guys on the Ultra X stand that I'd been chatting to on social media. They really cool couple of guys, Sam and Chris. I really like what they're doing with the multi-stage scene at the minute. So hopefully gonna hook up with them in future. And just there was the Rerun Trail guys, Andy in specifically, who grabbed me in basically a headlock and came over and came over and wanted to chat. And every coach that came up to me and smiled or introduced themselves or said they like my stuff, I thought that was really good because, yeah, I can be a bit cutting sometimes. I may kind of call other coaches out and things like this, but it's all just a bit of fun. The coaches that were coming up to me and said they enjoyed what I'm doing, I really kind of thank you for that, if I'm honest. And hopefully see you all soon. Well, I thought they did a really good job, actually. And I've told them that because it could have just been, you know, the National Running Show, big expo, a couple of the old kind of Olympians talking, and then ultra and trail kind of stuffed in a corner. And it wasn't that at all. It was, most of the talks were pretty engaging that were organized by Bad Boy Running, and there was the trail side of things too. Yeah, and it just felt like everyone was there for a bit of a good time, especially obviously down in the trail and ultra bit. Everyone was out for a good time, so all the stalls probably kind of felt the benefit of that, whether it be a race or product or kind of a nutritional product, which there seemed to be fucking thousands of them. I hope that everyone had a good weekend, because I thought, from my point of view, everyone was up for a good time at that. It wasn't boring at all. So yeah, well done to the team at National Running Show. That's the first event like that that I've actually enjoyed, which is a bit of a compliment, I can guarantee you. And apart from that, I won't lie, I was glad to get out of there once I'd done all my duties and finished up with friends and things like that, retreat back to Wales, see the kids, get back home, back to normality. And I was running in the rain and the snow just a few hours later. So yeah, if you are a trail or ultra runner, which I assume most of you are that listen to this, next year when it's on, I'd go and give it a crack if you're within spitting distance, because there was lots of good talks, to be fair, and it's only going to get bigger next year. I've heard it's going to be three times bigger down the ultra end. There is lots of great talks on it, to do some more talking in future. I think from the feedback, it seemed to go pretty well, but you're not going to hear necessarily bad feedback. I mean, nobody's going to send me a DM or a message saying, Gary, that talk was shit, or what the hell were you doing at the running show? I'd rather have listened to fucking someone else. So yeah, there was probably some of them too. But yeah, feedback was good. Like I said earlier, if you fast forwarded, great. This is just Alex's talk on the runner's tummy and the sports dietitian. If you're searching for her on social media, give her a follow. And I will stick her kind of links and website details in the show notes, because that's what all the professionals say. Don't actually know who's ever gone into the show notes of any podcast and done this kind of thing and checked it out. But yeah, I'll stick them in there anyway, because that seems to be what we have to do. So here is Alex and the Runner's Tummy Talk.
Is it Sunday you're talking, isn't it?
Sunday morning, yeah. Quite vague on what's actually happening, so
they're really vague.
For the latest podcast, we've already done an introduction, but Alex is here. She's just tucking into a whisper and a cup of tea.
promise you wouldn't say.
No, yeah, she's on the podcast. We've decided to talk about runner's tummy, which is also the topic of a talk at the National Running Show this year. So we're going to go over it as well. Alex, if you'd like to say a few words about yourself first.
Hi, Gary, everyone. Thanks for having me on. So I'm Alex. I'm a sports dietitian. I've been practicing now for about 15 years. And I mainly specialise in endurance. So I'd say I predominantly work sort of 98% of my caseload is runners. I do work with some triathletes and cyclists, but I'd say the majority is runners. And I think that's along the lines of the fact that I am a runner as well. I've been a runner for, God, 20 years now, which sounds like a really long time. makes me sound really old. Maybe I'm really old. I'm 40 in May, so that is quite old. And I'm also a coach, but I don't really do that much coaching. It's not really sort of my main bread and butter. Nutrition is. And so, yeah, you know, it's I love nothing more than talking about running and nutrition. I'm getting to talk this weekend at the running show about runner's tummy, which is a really, really good topic to discuss, because I'd say sort of 80% of runners suffer from it.
And how often do you get asked about it? Because even me, like, I'm probably I'm definitely the other way around from you. So coaching is kind of my thing.
Yeah.
But nutrition was always an interest. But I'd say, yeah, most people that I coach come to me at some point with that kind of issue.
I think it's really, really common. And even I used to suffer really badly in the earlier phases of my running career. I don't suffer so much now. I guess simply because, you know, I've been able to implement all the information that I've learned over the years to my own practice. I mean, it doesn't always work. You know, things that we'll talk about today, obviously, unless you've got someone in a lab environment and exactly finding out exactly why, you know, they're suffering or what's triggering it, it's always a bit of trial and error. But, you know, there are lots of things that you can do to try and control it and sort of train your gut to be a bit more tolerant.
And before we get into it, when you was it always run specific nutrition and being a run specific coach that you wanted to do when you were doing, obviously, when you were doing your training?
Yeah, I think my running started first, really. So I started running when I was 19, and then I went in to do sports science at Birmingham. And I was lucky enough to work during my degree with a professor called Professor Asger Jerkendrup, who is probably one of the world's leading sports nutritionists or sports scientists. And a lot of his studies and work he was doing was very endurance based, a lot of sort of, you know, carbohydrate metabolism during exercise. So it was that that kind of, I think, sparked off my interest. And then I went off into study dietetics post-grad. So I did sort of my stint clinically to sort of build up that experience and that knowledge with clinical nutrition. And then I started working for the army, and then the sport kind of followed on from that, really.
And some of, like, I've read some of his books, actually, and they're kind of, out of all the books, he seems to try and make it a bit simpler to understand, or it was for me anyway, than some of the other books. Was that how the way you learnt as well?
When I hear you
put out information, you do try and keep it simple as well. Was that part of it, or?
I wouldn't say necessarily. I mean, there's a difference between sort of learning things sort of, you know, from academia and then being able to translate that science into sort of easy, understandable knowledge. And I'd probably say that obviously my degree was learning more sort of the academia, but actually the dietetics and the nutrition side of it, you know, because obviously I was learning a lot how to sort of translate all the nutrition knowledge I knew into being able to translate that to patients.
Yeah.
You know, so there might be a lot of diabetes, a lot of weight management, you know, sort of pediatric nutrition. So it was really, really important, you know, and you're working with a massive breadth of people, you know, of knowledge and understanding. So I'd say it was more my dietetic training that actually gave me the ability to translate the science and now be able to translate the science into more understandable chunks. So actually, if you hear me talk, I don't really go into the science massively. You know, I will obviously, everything that I'm saying is all science-based, but you won't see me sort of throwing up loads of graphs and trying to blind everyone with all my academic knowledge. I know that I know that stuff, but it's actually not that important for the user to, you know, actually be blinded by all this science. You know, I will use science to advise, and then I will break it down so people can just use it in their day-to-day life, really.
Okay. And with the so using that, because when I hear runner's tummy, that kind of thing, it's almost, I get confused. Well, not get confused sometimes. I think people are confused what runner's tummy might be, because I think it covers such a broad subject. It's like, kind of, is it during the race? Is it before the race? People will say, "Oh, my IBS flares up or something." It's like, is it the same
thing? It is. Yeah, it is. And I actually, from writing, I've almost finished writing the presentation now for the weekend, and actually I do keep coming back to that because, you know, it is actually GI distress, you know, gastrointestinal distress. So that can actually range from, you know, nausea, reflux, you know, vomiting, which is your upper GI that some people suffer from, you know, belching, or it could be lower GI, which is, you know, diarrhea, bloating, flatulence. So actually it's not just, you know, we use sort of runner's tummy as the broad term. But again, you know, then there are so many sort of multifactorial reasons as to why people get it. You know, it could be, as you say, they already have an existing condition. They might have, you know, inflammatory bowel disease. They might have Crohn's. They might have IBS, which is, you know, very, very common. So it is very individual.
And if I'm a runner,
yeah, it's not so broad.
If I'm a runner that's never experienced those problems before, it's all right. If I'm a runner that's never experienced those issues, say, and and then I do get some kind of distress during the race, we'll start during the race. Is it usually the same reason why, or is it, like you said, could it be anything else?
I mean, I think, you know, you do tend to have people that suffer or don't suffer.
Yeah.
You know, you might have somebody like me that used to suffer and don't anymore. Generally, it's hard to say, isn't it? Because you don't really know what's going on with that individual. If you don't normally suffer and then suddenly you have a bad race, it could be that you've got a virus. It could be that you ate something that, you know, you shouldn't have and it's made you unwell. It could just be one of those things.
Mm.
You know, with females, it could be sort of hormones. There are so many different sort of, you know, your body reacts to things in so many different ways. It's hard to sort of pinpoint, and that's why it's such a difficult thing. You know, there are some people, you know, I've worked with some people that haven't been able to go out for a 5-mile run without having to stop and go to the loo. You know, and some people just suffer when they're racing. Some people only suffer when they get over 50 miles in an ultra. You know, vomiting is really common. I get quite a lot of people coming to me saying that, you know, they get to, you know, the last quarter of their ultra and they start vomiting and they can't stop. So it is all, and that's why it's sort of almost, it's not the kind of thing that people should really deal with on their own. You know, if they are suffering, they should actually get advice. But one really, really important point to say is that, you know, any issues with your guts needs to not be ignored. You know, if you do have any sort of, what's it called, them sort of red flag symptoms, you know, things like if it has come out of nowhere and you're sort of regularly suffering, if you're getting blood in your stools, if you're suffering from fatigue or weight loss, you know, maybe if your GI symptoms are waking you at night, or like you've got a family history of bowel, you know, bowel disease or bowel cancer, then it's definitely something that you need to go to your GP first.
Yeah.
So if people come to me and say, I've been suffering, this is what I've been having, I will say to them, go to your GP, you know, get the all clear, and then come back to me.
And then come back. Because I guess, like, what I will get is, what is the best food I can have, basically, to stop me going 30 seconds before a race? Or what is the best food I can have at a checkpoint to stop me having these issues? And it's almost like you can't really answer that question, can you? There's no best food for any of that.
I mean, I think with ultras it's really hard because obviously in an ultra you are out for so long, and it's really hard. And also you can't necessarily sort of replicate that in training, because even if you're going to do a 10-hour ultra, maybe the longest training run you're going to do is maybe 4-5 hours. You know, you're never going to go up to that 10 hours, are you? So with an ultra you generally have that period of time where it's like especially if it's the first time you've done that distance, it's like that unknown zone, isn't it? You don't really know what your body's going to do and how it's going to react. So it's really hard to sort of pinpoint that down. I mean, we do know that, you know, foods higher in fiber, protein and fat are harder to digest. You know, they're slower to get out of digest and break down. So if you are suffering, then, you know, it's better to sort of stay away from higher fat and protein foods in an ultra, because it's just going to stick around in your stomach a lot longer.
And can that affect that will affect things like blood flow and all sorts, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, when we run, we do know that we have an aspect of gut ischemia, which is basically, you know, the blood is directed away from your guts to your working muscles.
Yeah.
And the longer the exercise is and the more strenuous it is, then the more pronounced that's going to be. Like I always use the example, I always find in a cross-country race when I'm doing one of them, you know, I'll be sort of running at controlled effort, and then in the last 800 meters I'll do a push for the line, and I can almost feel, it's almost like, you know, I can almost feel it, because suddenly I'll get those stomach cramps. Okay, because yeah. Suddenly, you know, I'm asking more from my body, the blood is diverting away from the gut to my working muscles, and I start getting cramps in my stomach. You know, that's a classic example of that working. Obviously in a cross country it doesn't really matter because it'll be over in a couple of, you know, yeah. a couple of minutes. But that's why we always say that it's almost better, the mistake people make with fueling is that they start fueling too late.
Yeah.
So say for example you're talking about like a 4-hour marathon, yeah, a lot of people will say, well, I take my first gel an hour in, or when I start to get tired. But actually you need to start early on, because your body can process the carbohydrate a lot more easily earlier on in exercise.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, if you know, if you've got a strong gut, then you'll be able to continue doing that. But especially for people that do suffer, it's better to make sure that you're starting earlier on, and also to stay hydrated, because dehydration can also exacerbate that, those symptoms. So in an ultra, you know, you might find that you can't take on any more food. So that's the first thing you do, isn't it? If you have a bad stomach, you stop yeah. taking anything. But actually it's important just to keep on taking your fluids.
Okay.
Because that will sort of help reduce those cramps.
And hydration kind of, and that doesn't start during the race really, does it? So they need to start looking at that. Well, should be all the time, but specifically before a race.
Like yeah, I mean, before. I'm not a massive, you know, when it's leading up to a race, I sort of say to an athlete, you know, just make sure that you're, you know, you don't have to obviously go crazy with the odd hydration, you know, just making sure that they're well hydrated, that their wee is not dark.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you don't want. So just making sure that they're drinking, you know, just because most of us don't. Most of us actually probably go through the day with tea and coffee and a couple of glasses of water. You know, I certainly know I do. But, you know, leading up to race, you just need to make sure that you're having that little bit of extra water and just make sure you're hydrated.
It's more not neglecting it, I guess, rather than thinking I need to.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a massive. I think, you know, people can get a little bit obsessed with hydrating, you know, before a race. I think just as long as you're sensible and just make sure you drink what you need, then you should be fine. But actually, with the stomach problems and racing, actually making sure that you keep up that hydration if you are having stomach cramps.
So even if you can't get the gels down or anything like that, it's really important hydration.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Especially in an ultra, because you could have a rough hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and depending on the race, you could still have another 10 plus hours left.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you know, generally, I mean, it depends on what you're suffering from. I mean, I know vomiting, you know, people doing ultras, vomiting is, you know, quite common, and that's probably slightly harder, but obviously you're losing fluid as well.
Yeah.
If you're vomiting, and you're vomiting and still intent on carrying on racing,
yeah.
Which plenty of people do, which absolutely amazes me. I think if I vomited once in a race, that'd be like, right, I'm out, I'm done.
Yeah. I've never vomited in a race yet. No.
No, I haven't either.
There's lots of people, like, if you're in, like you say, in the 24-hour things, they'll be vomiting from quite early on, just on the side, and then you see them just carry on kind of thing.
And then nails.
It just shows you how different people's guts are to begin with, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And those people that are more prone to vomiting probably would never have diarrhea.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other way around. But it's quite, you know, a lot of people will try and fight off that feeling of, you know, once they start getting those cramps and they think, oh no, you know, I'm getting cramps, it's going to happen. And they'll keep trying to run and keep trying to run and think, no, it will go. But actually sometimes, especially if you're doing an ultra when actually you're probably in the middle of nowhere and you can just, you run, you become anxious. You know, it's almost like you're wishing it upon yourself.
Yeah.
And that's where that sort of vicious cycle comes in. So sometimes, you know, I do sort of get my athletes, you know, and I say to them, if you're on a training run, if the cramps do start coming, rather than start focus on the cramps and start thinking, oh my God, you know, I'm going to need the loo, this is awful, my training's not going well, you know, it becomes the main thing you think about. Distract yourself from it. You know, I say do your times tables, you know, think about your shopping list, do whatever, turn up your music and sing. Try and distract yourself from those feelings, especially if you know that actually you have been to the loo before you went and actually you shouldn't need to go. Yeah. It doesn't work for everyone, but it can work really well.
It's like if I go to the toilet before I go to bed, right? And then you get in bed and guaranteed I need to go and get up straight away, kind of thing, yeah? For a wee, that is.
Yeah.
But, and I always think that's a similar kind of thing. Like you rush to go before a race, you get all that sorted. You wouldn't usually need it again in the next 10 minutes, never mind, hour, whatever.
No, exactly. It's like if you're camping, isn't it?
Yeah.
You make that effort last thing at night to trot across the portaloo and go, and then you get back into your tent and you think 10 minutes later, do I need to go again? You know, it's like that fear, isn't it, of thinking that you need to go. And actually, of course, you don't need to physically.
A lot, especially beforehand, which I guess is different, before a race, people say, some people are genuinely nervous or they've got anxiety around it, things like that. But I also get a lot of people that say, well, I'm not worried about the race, but I'm still stuck in the toilet beforehand. And I think that must be part of it down to being like the learned behaviour side of it.
I think it definitely is. And I think, you know, I certainly, when I started out running years ago, I used to be one of those people that would spend, you know, half an hour in the portaloos and I'd be in and out and in and out. And actually, as I got older, and I guess, you know, as you get older, you sort of learn, you understand your body a bit more. I'd be able to reason with myself and say, well, actually, I've been to the loo this morning. You know, most mornings I'm quite lucky, you know, I'm quite regular. I'll go to the loo in the morning and that will be me until the next morning. Yeah. So I think, well, actually, when I'm at home, I'll go to the loo, I'll do a poo, and that'll be me for the rest of the day. Even if I'm going to go training at 3 o'clock, I won't need to go to the loo again before. So why is it any different? And actually that ability for me to say to myself, I've emptied my bowels, there's nothing really left in there. So I don't need to sit in this grotty portaloo worried that something is there that needs to come out, because actually it probably doesn't.
I think people just, because you hear the stories when you come into running and everything and everyone's paranoid that they are going to need to get on the side of the road or it's going to happen mid-race and things like that, so they put too much kind of emphasis on sitting in that portaloo, and then and it is like, it's like the dog in the front room the first time, the postman syndrome, when the postman comes, doesn't bark much, and then every time the postman comes it gets louder and louder and more aggressive because the dog thinks that it's doing the right thing and chasing him away. And it's, you just see it happening and people say it gets worse every time, but there's no because I think there's no, unless you are, if it's nerves and anxiety and things like that, then they should be tackling the nerves and anxiety, right? Rather than looking for the magic food to solve that or the magic breakfast.
I mean, there's, you know, there's huge reasons that can cause it. And, you know, what I'm talking about on Saturday is, you know, you have the physiological reasons that cause it, which is the gut ischemia and also sort of hormones as well. You know, obviously the release of cortisol, you know, your sympathetic nervous system, all of that has an effect on your gut. So there's physiological reasons that happen. There's also mechanical reasons, which is obviously the pounding, the up and down movement of running. You know, it's like putting something into a food mixer and jumping up and down, isn't it? So that can be a factor. Food, as I'm sure we'll elaborate on a little bit more in a minute. And also the psychological factor of it as well. So there's so many things that you need to address and think about. You know, it's very hard to, you can't really change the physiological actions that are going on in your body, but you can try and understand them and learn about it. And it's just about trying to put different things in place. But it's really important, you know, I think I should say that anyone that does suffer really, really badly, and I'm not just saying this to plug business for myself at all, because, you know, I'm not, you know, it's really important that if you can, to see someone to help you sort it out, because it's not, you know, you don't want to be getting to the habit of cutting out food here, there and everywhere to try and address the problem. It's about doing it in a logical, safe way so that you're still feeling really well for your run, but trying to sort of identify perhaps those trigger foods.
And should they be looking at kind of intolerances and things, or should it just be a case of speaking to someone like you?
No, I definitely don't think. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, unless you, if you're just suffering whilst you're running,
yeah,
then it's not going to be an intolerance to food. I mean, it can be said that, you know, food's higher in fibre can obviously aggravate it. So quite a successful approach is that I've used with quite a lot of my athletes. And again, it doesn't work with everyone. But, you know, reducing the fibre for sort of 24 to 48 hours before a race. So that's, you know, just having white bread, not having seeds and skin on fruit, you know, completely cutting out the fibre.
Yeah.
Also potentially looking at dairy, sort of lactose leading up to the run, and also fructose, which is in your fruit. So obviously you wouldn't do all of that at the same time, but it's like a stepped phased process to see what's going to work. And you might cut those things out and it not make any difference.
Yeah.
But it's almost a bit like a trial and error, really.
And if, like, I know one of the questions in the group was about, basically, if you completely empty yourself before a race, and there's nothing left to give, basically, is that going to have an effect during the race? I think what they were trying to get at is kind of, is your energy stored already, kind of thing? Or
is it, what, are you losing your energy through your poo?
Yeah, basically. I think that's what they were kind of getting at.
Seriously?
Yeah, so I think it was like, you know, if you leave yourself completely empty, do I need to restock my energy levels?
Well, as in empty from because you've been to the loo, or empty because you've not eaten?
No, basically, I've shit myself so much that...
Okay.
Yeah. Do I now need to kind of... The traditional kind of, right, whether they've carb loaded or they've just had normal breakfast. But yeah,
no.
They wanted you to explain if they would be left with no energy after that kind of experience in the toilet.
No, I don't think so. I mean, the only scenario that I can consider is if you were sort of having an aspect of sort of severe diarrhea, obviously, like, for example, when you have a stomach bug, you know, you eat a banana and literally you're pulling it straight out, you know. So unless you're in that situation where everything you eat, you know, you're not well and you're eating and it's literally coming out the other end. No, in a normal situation, you know, if you're having a good poo before you run,
yeah,
then you've still got your, you know, if you think your glycogen is stored in your muscle and your liver, that's already been sort of used and stored.
Yeah.
It's totally moved away from the bowels. So it's only food and waste that's left over in your bowels that's being pooed out.
So they're perfectly fine, yeah, to go and race. Well,
yes,
it's quite a logical question, a kind of, in a certain way. If you, it depends if you know how energy is kind of stored and that, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think, like, for me, like, I told you that story, didn't I? I messaged you. Like, my first ever ultra, I think I wasn't really nervous about the actual race or anything. I was a bit late, and the nerves and anxiety come from being late to the race rather than
horrible. Yeah.
Anything else. And
it's like a nightmare, isn't it, being late for a race?
No, yeah. And it was back when there was, like, the internet wasn't that old at the time. So the website for the race wasn't kind of too clear. Just turn up. There's just a load of old men there, one portaloo with a bit of a queue, but I just needed to go, kind of thing. There was no way I was going to get to the front of the queue, so I ran off to a field. Well, I thought it was a field. I was in London, first time in London. So I ran off to the field, and I knew I was going to miss the start of the race, but again, like, there was probably 200 runners that day, so not massive, but they all came charging down the field while I was in the middle of the field with my shorts on my ankles. And that was my first experience of, like, race day, like, anxiety around that. The very next time I had a race, it was pure paranoia about toilet kind of thing. And back then I didn't drink coffee or anything. And then fast forward, like, years later, now I just my routine is I will have a good coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I know if I have a good coffee, I'm going to be in the toilet within, like, 20 minutes probably. And it takes.
Yeah.
And then after that, you don't worry about it. I know that's me personally, but I think having a routine, whatever your routine is quite a good idea as well.
I think you're right. And I think routine's really, really important, which is why we say, isn't it? And it's when you coach, you know, you say say, for example, you're training for your marathon, you will say, and same for me when it comes down to food and prep for a race, you'll say, right, your long run is on a Sunday, so try and have your breakfast at the same time in the morning, you know, same thing in the morning that you're going to have in your race day. Mm. Now, I thought this weekend has gone, I actually did my long run on Sunday afternoon. And so that had given me a day and a half of rest because Saturday was a rest day. I then had all morning on Sunday and I felt incredible. I felt so good. Normally I get up quite early and go on Sunday morning. And I thought, well, this is great. I thought, well, maybe this is what I need to be doing because I feel strong. I feel more rested. Obviously I've had a bit more rest and I had a lion this morning. And then I thought, well, actually though, that's not setting me up very well for race day. Yeah. You know, if I'm doing all my long runs in the afternoon, that's then not getting my body sort of used to doing what I have to do on race day. And routine's really important. And I did a race in Italy, it wasn't last year now, 2018. And that started at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know, and that for me, because I do probably have aspects of IBS in the sense that if my routine is put out at all, then my bowel routine is completely out. You know, so if I travel or I have to get up earlier than normal, then I don't have that lovely sort of clockwork bowel movement. But, you know, so that for me was really, really difficult because 11 o'clock at night, I mean, who runs at 11 o'clock? Who starts a run at 11 o'clock at night? So that was tricky, but sometimes you just have to go with it. And I think what you have to tell yourself, and for me, when I used to suffer so badly from stomach problems, I think probably what helped me get over the anxiety was saying, well, if I have to go, I have to go. Mm. I'll either go behind a bush or I can stop in a pub or in a coffee shop. Generally, there will be somewhere you can go if you have to do a poo.
And you think?
And actually accepting that, I think, reduces the anxiety massively.
Yeah, I think how much of it is kind of like a bit of a British thing as well, because I've been in France and Italy in races, and if I go for pee in a bush, guaranteed there'll be three to five men and women squatting around, just chatting, basically.
Oh yeah, 100%. When I did Berlin Marathon years ago, I'd only done marathons in I'd only done London, actually. And I couldn't believe all these women that were just like squatting down in the middle, like literally in front of everyone. You know, they had those sort of you know, the plastic covers that you get put on. And they were just cagoule things. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, they were just squatting. And I was like, you know what? Why not? Why not? And I think actually as a runner, you are a lot more used to doing that and it's a lot more acceptable than, you know, I have friends that say they've never done a wee in the wild. I call them wild wees.
Yeah.
I've got kids, so you've got to name everything, give everything a name, don't you? You know, I've got some friends, not runners, they said they've never done a wee outside.
Yeah.
And to me, that blows my mind because as runners, actually, generally, it's quite a normal thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's, on the other side of that, there seems to be a lot of kind of, this is men, basically. Men,
mm-hmm.
It seems to be a good thing to shout about that they took one on the side of a roundabout or something. It's like,
during 100%. Yeah, my husband's the same. Whenever we go back down to Cornwall on holiday, he absolutely loves it. And he was in the military as well. So again, it's probably even more acceptable.
Yeah.
Loves talking about, oh, that's the place I did that massive poo when I went for a run with your sister. I don't think my sister's ever been the same or maybe even been running with him again since.
Yeah.
But it is about, you know, jokes aside, it is about, you know, I put a poll out on my Instagram for this talk and said, you know, who is embarrassed about talking about this?
Mm.
And I think it's 28% of people, I can't remember what, you know, I think I had probably over 100 people answer, 28% of people were embarrassed about talking about it.
Yeah.
And years ago when I started my business, I got my first writing gig for Athletics Weekly and it was on runner's tummy. So it's my first ever bit of writing. I was really excited. And it went out online and it actually was the most read article of 2014.
Okay.
And it's not because, you know, as I'm saying in my talk at the weekend, it's not because I'm like, you know, a secret sort of world's best author. I purely think it's because so many people suffer and so many people don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And so obviously the internet is a great source for people to find out why it's happening and what they can do about it because they are embarrassed, but they shouldn't be. You know, we all do it. You know, and actually most of us as runners suffer from it.
So what would be the kind of, if, like I said, a lot of the questions I would get is, what is the best food or what is the best breakfast kind of thing? Is it just a case of that there isn't an answer to that apart from like the old whatever works for you kind of thing? Or is there specific things you can do?
No, there definitely are specific things you can do. So, you know, again, it depends on what your symptoms are. But if we're talking about sort of probably the more common, which is, you know, diarrhea, needing to do a pee when you're out. I would probably say making sure you're not really having much fiber, protein and fat in your breakfast. So if you really, really suffer, something even like going to something like Rice Krispies or like you can make porridge from like rice. It's almost a bit like rice pudding.
Yeah.
So that's sort of slightly less fiber, slightly more easier on your stomach. You know, maybe some white bread. You want to try and get the carbs in, and it's quite difficult because obviously it's the carbs that potentially, you know, the higher fiber carbs that potentially might be causing aggravation. But just trying to keep your breakfast lighter on the fiber front, but also making sure you're giving enough time for it to digest.
Yeah.
So not expecting your body to be able to have breakfast and then go out half an hour later. You know, it might mean that you have to get up a bit early and give yourself sort of 2 to 3 hours to digest that breakfast.
And like, I think it's kind of lost, but a lot of the elite marathon runners or kind of the old school way of doing it, you would, if they had an early race, you would get up early, have breakfast, and even go to the toilet, and then they'd go back to sleep kind of thing for an hour and that kind of thing. So it, a lot of the time it is the whole just, it is digestion kind of thing, rather than, I've done it myself, you're driving to a race or something and you're kind of trying to eat porridge at the same time and it's 40 minutes before a race. It's, and then people wonder why
you're getting stomach problems. I think also, you know, if you're the kind of runner that actually gets up and runs without food at all.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked with a group of people and actually the majority of them, because they were getting up so early for one reason or another to run, every single run they did, they were doing it without breakfast.
Yeah.
So then they'd come to a race and either they would then race without eating or they'd have something and then suffer because they're not used to it.
Yeah.
So again, that's another thing you have to consider, actually what, you know, that's why that long run, that long training run is important, because you need to be having your breakfast as if you were going to race so that your body can become used to it.
And can they look to things like liquids or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously liquids are going to be digested quicker. So I suppose if you've got less time, then maybe like a smoothie. So sometimes, you know, if you're whipping up sort of milk, banana and oats. Yeah. But again, it's tricky because it's still that aspect of sort of the individual. And really, I think if you are prone to getting stomach problems, you really need to make sure that food is digested and gone out of the stomach by the time you start running.
I always say, and I think that's probably key. Really, if they do have specific problems quite a lot in races and it's, say, they're having a 6 o'clock start or anything, I get that they don't want to get up at like 2 or 3 o'clock. So I just put the emphasis on like their evening meal and things. And as long as they kind of nail that, maybe have that a bit later, and then you can have a lighter breakfast and not. And as long as you start fueling early, like you say, in your race, you might be all right.
I mean, I think you're right, but I think it depends on what your goal is from your race, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think if, you know, you're going out to try and get your sort of sub-3 marathon, then you definitely want to be having, you know, whereas if you're going out to get round, then, yeah, that strategy would definitely work.
Because there's not many, there's no many marathon runners that I speak to that can have the argument I can't get up early enough, because they just don't start at the same time, do they? It's only like ultra runners that are going to spend all day out anyway, that are getting up to race at 6, that might have an issue. And it's kind of, well, you can just start slowly and maybe have your breakfast at the first checkpoint.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think with an ultra it's different, and because you are slower, and I think slower intensity is easier to, and actually the argument is with an ultra, you know, you need to be able to take on food, don't you, when you're running. So say when you're doing a long race, you know, when I've done my long races, you know, you will stop, you know, if you're out for 20 hours, you will stop and probably have a bit of pasta. or, you know, a bit of solid food. So actually, you know, I say to a lot of my athletes that are training for ultras, have your breakfast a bit closer. Now, those that suffer from stomach problems, it's something we just need to work through, and it might be slowing your pace down, you know, for the first half an hour. You know, because sometimes just slowing that intensity down will reduce those stomach problems as well.
And if it's someone some people still prefer, obviously, to eat, call it real food or solid food.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it's better for them to have little and often rather than try and get their calories and carbs in one go every couple of hours or every hour kind of thing. Or would it not matter too much digestion-wise?
Again, with an ultra, really, it is, isn't it? Because you can advise and you can say, this is what I think you should do. But I think with ultras, as you know, it changes, doesn't it? Like, so you might set out and be able to sort of take on larger amounts of food in the first half, but then in the second half, it's literally, you know, taking what you can. So probably if you are prone to stomach problems or vomiting, they're probably taking on smaller amounts and letting your body digest that rather than expecting it to digest, you know, a whole load all at once whilst running. It's probably like putting a lot less demand on your system. But I think also making sure you're having that sports electrolyte drink. If you can't take on,
believe that you can train your gut. I don't know if that's kind of,
yeah, you can. You can 100% train your gut. And this is why I sort of say to people, if you have got an event coming up and you want your race nutrition looked at, you need to look at it at least 3 to 4 months before your event so that you can train your gut up to tolerate it. Now, I will always, you know, really on a 2-hour run, you probably can definitely get away without doing that without gels.
Yeah.
But I will always take 2 gels with me on runs from 2 hours up, because I just want to keep my body used to being able to take them.
Yeah.
And it not seem unusual to my body. So, you know, from 2 hours upwards, I will always take gels with me, just to keep my body sort of used to taking on those carbs. And then again, you know, on ultra runs, you know, I was running with a friend who does a lot of ultras. She was saying she doesn't really take stuff on her training runs.
Yeah.
But then she struggles when she races. You know, in every training run, you should be taking out food, you know, trialing different things, different bars, different chocolate bars, different gels, you know, savory potatoes, whatever your thing is, you need to take it out and trial it and practice with it.
Yeah. Like
the, so that your body gets used to it.
I remember, this is just personal, but I think I kind of knew what I needed to do a lot quicker than my body could do it, if that makes sense. So I was running races and trying to pile in the carbs, but I was getting nauseous. I was never sick or anything, but it was nausea, and it would just completely slow me down and all that kind of, and you couldn't understand it because I kind of, well, I thought I kind of had a grasp on the science, but then when I actually tried to do it in practice, it just wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like you said, you need to spend that time, because now, like, I'll be honest, I could just throw anything down. I could throw gels down constantly. I can have food. Yeah. Whatever, but it wasn't like that at the start. But then,
no, and that's because you trained your gut to do it. I mean, years ago, I started off doing road marathons, and I could not tolerate any of the sports drinks, you know, and I just wouldn't bother. You know, I was young, I could get away with it. And then when I started getting into ultras, I thought, well, this isn't going to work. I have to, you know, having a sports drink is actually a really good base, isn't it, for your nutrition, because you can have that as a base. You've got your electrolytes, you've got your carbs, and you've got your hydration. So it ticks all three boxes. So it kind of, for me, I think that's a really good base. And so I thought, I've got to start getting used to it. So I did my research, found some brands that I actually liked. And, you know, you just start off by just taking little sips, and you just increase it and increase it. And now, you know, I can tolerate them really well. So it is about, you can train your gut to, you know, when people say, I can't take on carbs when I'm exercising, it makes me feel sick or it gives me a bad stomach. You can, you've just got to invest the time into it and practice.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen overnight. It could take 6 months, could take a year. You know, it's taken me years to be able to, you know, from doing ultras, you know, I'm still amazed at the fact that, you know, I can stop when I'm doing an ultra and have a small bowl of pasta and then carry on running. you know, if somebody had told me I'd be able to do that, you know, 15 years ago, I never would have believed them, but you just get used to it.
And people are kind of, so if people are wanting to kind of, they've either got problems beforehand, say, or problems during, what practically should they be doing now? Go through both of them. Because if it's beforehand, it's possibly, like you say, the kind of more like the learnt behaviours and anxiety and things like that, maybe. If they don't
have it in daily life.
So it's things like, just having the routine, even having organisation beforehand, and just knowing, plus knowing that it's okay to have that coffee and go as much as you want beforehand and be quite relaxed about it.
It is. I think routine is really important, and actually anyone that sort of suffers from, you know, if it's not even, running related from IBS, you know, routine, the gut really does react to routine. So if you are the kind of person that is, you know, does spend a lot of time on the loo before they run, you know, actually perhaps running at the same time every day and trying to get as much routine into your diet, you know, so making sure you have breakfast around the same time, lunch, dinner. It's almost like your body knows what to expect, you know. So for you, your body in the morning, you know, you'll have a cup of coffee, and you know that's almost like your signal now. And you know that you will go after you've had that cup of coffee. So it's about getting that routine, but it's also about reducing that anxiety. You know, obviously if you're having diarrhea or loose stools all the time, then that's 100% something that needs to be looked into and seen by your GP. And like I said, even if it, you know, people that are suffering should go and get checked out anyway. But if it is just before you go for a run, then, you know, anxiety, you need to look at maybe, you know, sort of managing your anxiety or maybe stress that's around that run as well, because that probably doesn't help. And during, you know, if you're suffering from during, if you're not doing, if it's during even just short runs, you maybe need to look at sort of your fiber intake leading up to your run, making sure you're not having much protein or fats before, you know, in your pre-run meal. And then if it's sort of during a longer run when you're taking on carbs, it's about perhaps just trying to practice maybe cutting back and taking smaller amounts more often, rather than, for example, taking a whole gel, you know, maybe just taking a quarter of it, putting it away, taking a quarter of it a bit later, because that's how you start to sort of train your gut to accept it a bit better.
But ultimately as well, I think it's like you said at the start, if people do all this training and they put all this effort into organising everything else, and people might spend lots of money on races and it takes up lots of their life, if it is a constant issue, then they should definitely be speaking to someone like you or
Because, you know, stomach problems are actually the most common reason for underperformance in runners. And, you know, you find this with nutrition all the time. People are willing to spend money on kits, races, you know, massage, gym membership, but actually, you know, little, and I guess it's because, you know, there is so much information readily available on the internet, but, you know, if you are going to go that route, you've got to make sure that you're getting it from sort of credible sources, making sure it's from registered nutritionists or registered dietitians. You know, obviously there's plenty of blogs and websites out there for that. But yeah, you know, hopefully, you know, if you can get yourself an appointment, because it might even only take one appointment just to talk through certain strategies to see what you can try out.
Right, great. Thanks, Alex, anyway.
That's all right.
Yeah, I think we've covered that subject enough. We can find you mainly on Instagram, is it? Sports dietitian.
Yeah, the sports dietitian on Instagram. I've also got a Facebook page, which actually I tend to put up more blogs actually on that.
Is that the same or is that Alex?
It's still the same, the sports dietitian. On Facebook. My Twitter is a little bit redundant, only when I get a little bit frustrated about things that I read, and you might see me pop out on Twitter now and again. But I don't put anything interesting on there myself. I'm just more of a Twitter stalker, really. But yeah, I'll hopefully be as well sort of writing a bit up about this, what I'll be talking about at the running show. But obviously this podcast is going to be a great support to those that have hopefully been to listen to me. and hopefully, you know, I think we've covered most of it.
Yeah, it's about covering the basics and then and talking about it and kind of thing. You can, that's fine too. And then I would just, yeah, look up Alex or anyone that you know that's qualified to talk about this stuff, I guess.
Yeah, definitely qualified, yeah, and wants to talk about it, yeah.
Right, thank you, Alex. So all Alex's details will be in the show as well. I'll put them on for you. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Gary. Bye.
It's all right, eh? So there you have it, the Runner's Tummy episode with Alex. Hopefully that's given you a bit of an insight and made you think about things. Hopefully you go away. If you have struggled, work on it or check out that there's no underlying issue first. If you're really struggling, then just go and speak to someone like Alex. Book in for a session or any other respectable sports dietitian you can find or know of already. That's cool. Try not to take too much advice from Instagram or Facebook. Same with all these other things, unless it's mine, obviously. But yeah, stuff like this, I'd rather speak to an expert maybe, back me up or to, yeah, point me in the right direction. So that's what you guys should be doing too, I guess. Like I said, I'll stick all Alex's details in the show notes. If you want to know more about my coaching club, then yeah, that will be in there too. But just, I'm pretty easy to find these days, Gary House on social media. Apart from that, I would really appreciate any reviews or any ranking or what do you call it, rating on iTunes or however you listen to your podcasts. We've had lots of great reviews. I really appreciate what was the last review I've got was it did give me 5 stars, which is amazing, and they also gave me some pointers on how to make it better maybe. But what made me laugh is what did he describe me as? Knows his stuff about the longer stuff, bit of a trier, will get better, kind of good if you've nothing else to listen to, which is my kind of review. So I'm not sure what your name was, but thanks for that review. I will do my best to make this podcast better. The next episode will be out at the end of this week, actually. It's already lined up. It's already done and dusted. Just need to add a few bits to it. So yeah, have a good week. Have a good week of training. And yeah, let me know if you've got any other ideas for the podcast. But apart from that, just give me a good rating, yeah? Okay, speak to you all soon.